It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. The Wisconsin legislature created the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program in 1989 to preserve valuable natural areas and wildlife habitat, protect water quality and fisheries, and expand opportunities for outdoor recreation. The program is funded on a 10-year cycle, and it's up for renewal. How have natural areas been part of your life? What do you think is the value of programs like this? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Mike Carlson, Executive Director of Gathering Waters, Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trusts. Mike, welcome to the morning show.
Thanks, John. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So how does the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program work?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, the stewardship program is nearly 30 years old, and it's been providing really critical funding to protect some of Wisconsin's most special places over that time period. So the stewardship program actually not only provides funding for the state Department of Natural Resources to protect things like state parks and wildlife areas, but it also provides funding to local governments, local communities, as well as to nonprofit conservation organizations such as Land Trust, which is who our members are around the state. So in Wisconsin, we have nearly 50 land trusts, so nearly 50 local nonprofits that really work closely with other partners to get land protection done. And stewardship's been a crucial program for that.
So how much land are we talking about in terms of what the stewardship program has been able to acquire since it started? Do you have any idea?
Yeah. So over that nearly 30 years, the stewardship program itself has protected nearly 500,000 acres of land. And I think, you know, for an average listener, that sounds obviously like a really large amount. I think it's worth noting that, you know, the number of acres really depends on kind of where you are in the state. So in northern Wisconsin, you know, might have, you know, a really significant, large, you know, 50,000 acre plus forests that are being protected versus maybe a few acres in a urban area like Madison or Milwaukee. So The total number, you know, 500,000 is very impressive. It's been an incredibly successful program, but I think it's also, it's really been able to address a number of different priorities throughout the state.
Now, the DNR recently requested a 10-year funding renewal for the program. How likely do you think it is that this request will actually be in the actual budget?
Sure. I think, you know, I feel quite confident about it, and I think it's this is a real opportunity, having the DNR, you know, make that request. It's a real opportunity, I think, for members of the public to reach out to their elected officials and say, hey, you know, this is a priority. We want to continue to see these kinds of investments in outdoor places, in special places here in Wisconsin for outdoor recreation, natural areas, and other priorities. You know, it's interesting. I think it's worth noting that the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program is named after two former governors, right? And it really embodies the bipartisanship of this program. So it's named after former Governor Gaylord Nelson, who is a Democrat, and a former Governor Warren Knowles, who is a Republican. And I think this is a tradition and a legacy in Wisconsin that has really enjoyed bipartisan support for decades. And because of that, I think, you know, we feel confident that this is something that the public supports and that, you know, we'll see be renewed in the next state budget.
There have been cuts to the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program in the last 10 years or so, though. Where have you seen the impact of these cuts?
Sure. So, yeah, in the last few state budgets, we have seen cuts to the program. I think the important thing to note, though, is that, you know, we still have a really robust Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program here in the state. We still have the program still funded at about $33 million a year. And it's still, again, providing really important funding support to a variety of different partners like DNR, local communities, and nonprofits, and county forests, among others. I think from our perspective, we're almost really looking kind of to the future and looking at, you know, if the governor and the legislature in the next state budget, if they don't act to continue the program, it's at risk of expiring during the next state biennial budget. So for us, it's, you know, let's look at the future. Let's look at, you know, what additional investments can we make to really bolster things like our state's $18 billion outdoor recreation industry and support our state's, you know, $24 billion forestry industry. So again, I think, you know, we have seen some cuts and some changes to the program, but it's still a very strong program and a program that I think, you know, we all want to see continued here in the future.
There was some concern back in 2015 that the program would be in trouble since there was a proposal to freeze it until 2028. Do you anticipate similar threats to the program to emerge again?
Sure, and I think that's a great example of where, you know, we and many other interested parties and members of the public were able to actually work in a very bipartisan fashion, actually, with the state legislature. You know, work across party aisles with folks across the political spectrum to make sure that that freeze on the program didn't happen, and then that funding continued. And so, since 2015, while you know that proposal was made to freeze the program back then, the program has in fact continued and has continued again with that $33 million a year in funding since then, and we're in 2018 here today. So. Again, I think we've been able to find some real champions for the program across the political spectrum. I think, you know, a lot of folks get the value of these kinds of investments, and so I feel confident we'll be able to, again, you know, find a kind of a reasonable compromise to continue to fund this program in the future.
Mike Carlson is the executive director of Gathering Waters, Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trusts. We're talking about the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. It's up for a renewal in the next budget, and that's why we're talking about it this morning. Some people might say that, or might question whether or not this is something taxpayers should be supporting. What do you say to that?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, it's important for listeners to understand that, you know, this is a program, again, that's been in place for nearly 30 years. And I think it's worth putting the cost of it in some context. For any Wisconsin resident, this program in any given year, you know, costs less than a state park sticker or less than a fishing license for any Wisconsin resident. And so, you know, we're talking about nearly 30 years of investments in things like state parks and trails and state forests that, again, directly support two of our biggest economic sectors in the state. The outdoor recreation industry it's a pretty staggering figure, I think, the $18 billion industry. And then again, the stewardship program supports also our state's forestry economy, and that's a $24 billion economy. So I think this program really directly supports our state's economy. So in that way, it's an investment that has a return to it. I think it's also worth noting, though, as well as, you know, we hear in the news a lot about recruiting and retaining talent for any number of different industries here in the state. And a big, you know, driver behind recruiting and retaining talent here in Wisconsin is quality of life. And, you know, I can't think of a program that goes more directly to investing in the quality of life here in our state than a program like Knowles-Nelson Stewardship. So I think, you know, again, it's a question of priorities. Obviously, not everyone's going to think that this should be a priority, but I think that there's a clear tie to the economic benefit that it provides.
Mike, thanks for coming in and being with us on the morning show this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.
Mike Carlson is the executive director of Gathering Waters, Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trusts. Coming up, time to declutter from all that free stuff we've been collecting. Find out more about that in just a moment. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Pens, water bottles, tote bags, t-shirts. Companies seem to always be handing out promotional items and freebies in an attempt to build brand recognition and win our business. Often we gladly accept these items, even if we don't need them, and they tend to accumulate over time in our home. It's sort of like an accretion disk around a planet. Do you always say yes to free stuff when it's offered, even if you don't need it? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Nicole Anzia is a freelance writer for The Washington Post and owner of Neatnik, a Washington, D.C.-based professional organizing service, but she's originally from Wisconsin. Her recent piece for The Washington Post is I Declutter Homes for a Living and I Hate Free Stuff. So, Nicole, as a professional organizer, how much does free stuff drive you up the wall?
Hi, John. It's great to be here. So I spend my days in other people's houses, and I'm helping them organize their possessions and responsibly offload the things they no longer need and don't want, either by donating them or recycling them. And I've noticed in both my own home and in my clients' homes that over the years, all of that free stuff is accumulating more and more. And so now they're paying me to help them organize things that they didn't even pay for. So it's become an increasingly bigger problem, I see.
And, we accumulate a lot of clutter anyway because we just buy a lot of stuff. And so if we're getting all this free stuff, too, that just kind of piles more and more on. You're seeing a lot of this. What do people say when you tell them, gee whiz, you really need to get rid of this stuff?
They are always saying, look, I didn't want this. I don't know what to do with it, but I just feel badly throwing it away. And so now they're trying to figure out, oh, I want to do something responsible with this. I don't want to just throw it away. But they've already got, 16 water bottles and reusable bags and enough T-shirts, for 12 people, let alone four. And so, they just have a really hard time parting with it. And but they don't need it. They realize they don't want it. And so now we try to help them find a way and a good place for somebody else to use it. Or to recycle them when we can.
I tend to notice that most of my free stuff ends up in the trunk of my car because I mostly get it at golf tournaments. And about once a year, I just throw it all away. And I think what I've started doing is just dumping it in the dumpster on the way out of the golf course. But it's everywhere. I mean, you can't really go anywhere without somebody saying, here, have a pen, have this, have that. And we don't really need any of this stuff, do we?
Right. Well, so what I was trying to think about in my column was to just start a conversation like this one about, holistically thinking about all of this free stuff that's available and whether or not, at the supply level, whether or not this is all making sense when we're all trying to be more responsible consumers and be more environmentally responsible. And so I was just trying to think like, okay, we get these things from camps, we get these things from sports events, we get these things from special events, we get them from nonprofits and charities who want our donations, we're getting them everywhere. And is it okay for us to just say no? Well, it definitely is, but we often don't. And so, like you said, all of the stuff either ends up in the landfill or a lot of us are donating them to charities both at home and abroad. And, there's no doubt that there is a need for these things a little bit in the United States and also in places like Latin America and in Africa and places where some of these thrift stores and other places will donate things. But even they are now realizing that there's too much of this stuff, and they don't even want it. So we're kind of flooding the market. And, so I just wanted to start a conversation about whether or not at the production level, do we really need these things for marketing? And could companies and nonprofits and other organizations sort of rethink the freebie?
So why do we take this stuff? I mean, is it just like we feel guilty if we don't? Someone offers us something and it's not polite to say, I really don't want that pen. Why do we take it?
I mean, I think that we think they'll be useful. And I think that sometimes we feel guilty or sometimes we think, oh, well, of course, this is great. I have a new pen. I have a new shirt. I didn't have to pay for it. But the problem is of course, we get home and we realize we have enough shirts, we have enough pens, and we don't need these things. But right, it seems like a good deal. And, you know, somebody's offering this stuff, and it seems rude to maybe decline it. And sometimes we don't even have a choice. It's just coming into our house. So I've seen with my kids and in my clients' homes, you know, their kids come home from camps and from sporting events, and they've got new tote bags and new lunch bags and hats and T-shirts and all of these things. So sometimes we're not even given the choice. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain amount of guilt or, you know, feeling badly about turning it down. And also we think like, oh, well, certainly we can make use of this. But then, of course, we don't.
And then there are all of those mailing labels that you get from various nonprofit groups. I think that we probably have an entire drawer full of that stuff at our house. We'd have to send, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces of mail over the next 10 years just to use up what we have now.
Right. And guess what? People are sending less mail, right? So this is a really big source of free stuff, you know, coming into our home. And it's something I wasn't able to touch on in my article just because of space, but that a lot of readers then followed up with me and said, why do I keep getting all of these address labels? Why do they send me these tote bags? Why do they send me these T-shirts that don't fit? Why are they sending me pads of paper I don't need? I would rather have them use, you know, my money and my donations for things for their cause and not, you know, sending me, you know, greeting cards mm-hmm. and all of those things. And you're right, in this era of us all doing more things electronically, we don't need those address labels. And, you know, there's every day, I mean, almost every day in my household, I get a mailing that includes one of those. So
I tried sticking them on my email, but I couldn't get them off the screen. So
Exactly.
Okay, so but it isn't just companies and so forth. You often even see, I understand, boxes of free stuff at garage or yard sales.
Oh, definitely. I mean, well, those are dangerous for other reasons, garage sales and things like that, for, you know, people to collect things that, you know, are seemingly treasures when they're there and they just can't resist and they bring home and then find that they don't really want. But that's a whole nother story. But yeah, I mean, I guess I just wanted to start a conversation about, you know, things like, okay, you know, water bottles. We all have these reusable water bottles now, and we think, oh, this is so great for the environment. We're not using those single-use plastic water bottles. But then we seem to be creating another problem in that these plastic reusable water bottles are almost like a disposable item because there are so many of them. And the same goes for reusable shopping bags. You know, like you go to the store, they're 99 cents. Okay, I'll buy another one. I can throw away my other one. You know, they've become almost a new problem in that they've sort of increased both water bottles, reusable water bags and things like that, or reusable shopping bags. And that now we've created a new problem in that these things are disposable now. And so it's just worrisome. I mean, yes, we can reuse them. Yes, there are ways to use plastic water bottles and reuse shopping bags in a lot of other ways. But still, we seem to be sort of flooding the market with these things and creating a whole nother problem because they're either free or inexpensive.
Well, then half the time you get to the store and realize you left the bag at home anyway.
Right, and then so, what do? You buy another one.
Get another one, that's right. Because
and then people are like, oh, I have all these reusable shopping bags, and I don't know how to store them, and I never use them, and I always forget them. So I just thought, you know, there was this recent effort, you know, that everybody's heard of about trying to reduce the use of or eliminate altogether single-use plastic straws, you know, and that just got me to thinking, like, that caught on and had such momentum, but, like, what about all of these other things that are sort of now considered disposable and that were not otherwise thought of as disposable in the past?
Well, it seems to me what you're asking us to do is to just be a lot more mindful about what we bring into the house in the first place, and then do we need it? Well, don't take it then, and really think about whether you need it or whether you don't. I think what we should do is have a discussion about what to do. Okay, so this stuff all came into our house. Now what do we do? Now what do we do with it? How do we declutter our house? We're going to get to that on the other side of our news break and as we continue our discussion. And I'm wondering what our listeners take. Do you find yourself being buried under a mountain of free stuff? Do you always take it when it's offered? Let us know what you think about that at 800-642-1234. What do you do with all the stuff? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Nicole Anzi is a freelance writer for The Washington Post and owner of Neatnik, a Washington, D.C.-based professional organizing service. Hey, she's originally from Wisconsin, though. Good for that. Her recent piece for The Washington Post is, "I declutter homes for a living, and I hate free stuff." We're talking about free stuff and what we should do with it. Wondering what you think. 800-642-1234. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. My guest says we're drowning in free stuff, but what do we do with all this junk once it's in the house? Is your home or office cluttered with junk you got for free? What do you think you should do with it? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest, Nicole Anzia, a freelance writer for The Washington Post and owner of Neatnik, a Washington, D.C.-based professional organizing service. Her recent piece for The Post is, "I declutter homes for a living. I hate free stuff." Well, Nicole, we've kind of talked about where a lot of this free stuff comes from. I guess the question then is, what the heck should we do with it so it doesn't end up in a landfill?
Right. So I urge my clients, and I work with them, to sort of think creatively about how this stuff could be repurposed or what we could do with it. I mean, there's definitely always an option in donating items to a local thrift store or to places like Goodwill or Salvation Army. But there's also other ways that we can reuse them. And so I think, you know, oftentimes we'll think maybe a local school could use, you know, something. They could use the water bottles for an art project. They could use, T-shirts and cut up the material and do something with that. Magnets and things like that. Maybe there's something creative they can do with that. I urge people to, of course, make an inquiry before they just show up with all of this stuff. But oftentimes, art departments at schools or a place that teaches art classes locally will be happy to reuse some of these things that we think are junk. They can be turned into beautiful things. So I urge people to think about that. As for the things that we get in the mail from nonprofits and charities looking for donations, greeting cards and calendars, things like that, oftentimes hospitals or senior living facilities are happy to take those. Again, I urge people to call first and not just show up, but sometimes those can be useful to the residents of places like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, the address labels you're just going to have to recycle and or use, unfortunately. And then the reusable shopping bags. I think the best thing we can do is to, pass them along and use them as often as we can, whether it be, using them to take clothing to be donated. Some people we'll give them to the vendors at farmers markets to use to bag up things that people are buying there. I ask people to sort of think creatively within their own network of community organizations about who may be able to reuse these things.
We had a call from Barbara in Oregon, Wisconsin, who called to say that the grocery store in her neighborhood gives you 10 cents off your groceries for every paper bag you bring back. So that's kind of interesting.
That is great. Yes. I love incentives like that for sure. And I shouldn't forget to mention that there are a lot of, in terms of clothing and free, you know, when you get a free T-shirt or a free sweatshirt, or, you know, sometimes even people are giving away corporate swag, like a fleece or something like that, that either doesn't fit or that we don't want. There are increasingly more retail stores that will take unwanted clothing and collect it and either give you something in return or donate to the charity of your choice in return. Retailers like Columbia and H&M and North Face, all of those companies I always urge people to look into because they will help in responsibly recycling clothing.
Let's take a call from Dennis in Two Rivers, who I think has a pretty creative use for address labels. Dennis, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I use them for removing lint instead of using masking tape. I just use those labels. It works well.
That is
and
a great idea. I love it.
Lint-covered labels in the wastebasket. Then it just kind of collects with the other dust and stuff I put in there, so it just kind of clumps up.
Okay. That is a great idea. I'm sure the people who are sending it to you may not love that as much as we do, but that is great.
Nicole, do you hear this kind of thing a lot from clients where people get really creative with some of the stuff they get?
I think people, we sort of try to think together, and often actually our kids can help us come up with great ideas. But, I think that there is sort of an exhaustion level, right, that all of a sudden hits us all because it's like, oh, we have so much stuff. We're constantly going through it. We're constantly trying to downsize. We're constantly trying to, move things in and out of our house in a way that's not only responsible but also helpful to the way we live. So people just feel like a little bit exhausted by it all. And so I always just try to think with them, about what we can do that will both both help them in getting rid of what they need, but also potentially help somebody else. So there's a lot of people who want this stuff to go to sort of its highest purpose. And I think that that's, really admirable, and so we do try to think creatively. But sometimes, as creatively as we think, and even if we're donating these things, some places may not want whatever it is. They may not want a portfolio embossed with a company's name. They may not want a magnet or a keychain or whatever. And then I just urge them that the thing to do is maybe to just take it to a local dump so that they can dispose of it properly, whether it's metal or an electronic something or, something like that. So not just maybe tossing it in your trash can, but like taking it somewhere where they can dispose of it in a more environmentally friendly way.
Is it also worth noting that for some people who may be struggling, this free stuff might be something they rely on? I mean, we're not trying to demonize anyone here.
No, not at all. And as I said earlier, there is definitely a need, and I don't want to minimize that at all. One of my sort of things that I work with clients on is, only donating things and giving things to charities and to nonprofits that people will really benefit from and use. And there's no doubt that there is a need in both the United States and in, countries elsewhere in the world. So I don't want to minimize that. It's just that even those organizations are feeling sort of overrun by this stuff, And even though we all want to donate, things that are nice and clean and wearable and useful, the fact is some of the things just aren't useful or desired by the people who mm-hmm. need them. And so there's just sort of we're just producing so much stuff at this point that it's just hard to give away. And but definitely, I think as much as we can, donate to places who need it and who will distribute it to those in need.
So I'm curious, Nicole, how you got into the business of helping people organize their space. That's something I would really like to know.
Yeah, so I started my business about 12 years ago. I sort of have always been a very organized person, and I had been working in politics and in Washington, D.C., especially, where there's a lot of people who work long days and don't sort of have time to do some of the things that need to be done around their house. They may be dual-income families with where, you know, the mom and the dad are both working, and they have young children, and they're working full-time, and they sort of are barely, you know, maintaining their regular sort of lives. And so I realized that there was maybe a place where it could be helpful to people to help them organize their homes, things that they just maybe could do if they had enough time, or maybe just aren't adept at doing. And so I just started, you know, talking to people, and I've done everything from organizing kitchens to playrooms to closets to helping people move. I just think in this, you know, fast-paced world we're all living in, you know, some of these other things can sort of be pushed aside, but that if your home is organized, it can be, you know, make your life easier on an everyday basis, and you know, can help everybody just feel like the house is running more efficiently and more and is just more organized. So I just sort of, you know, I started, and I think in the past couple of years, I mean, really for the entire time, but people are really starting to rethink, you know, what is coming into their homes, what they need, how they can be more environmentally friendly, how they can live with less, and sort of just reevaluating the purchases they make, and also all of this free stuff that just ends up in their home.
Well, and let's not even get started on all the things we're inheriting from our parents these days.
Oh,
yeah. that's a whole other.
Yeah, let's not get started. That's a whole nother thing, right? Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff that our parents thought and that was so valuable at the time are things that people of a younger generation aren't as interested in having, and you know, are hard to sort of figure out what to do with as well.
Yeah.
So yes, I help people with that a lot.
It could be a reality show. What's this painting doing in my house?
Who's right, or this beautiful old, you know, secretary desk that is lovely, and I really, you know, I think it's so beautiful, but I just, you know, my laptop doesn't really fit.
Yeah, no kidding. Who's less organized, people from Wisconsin or people from D.C.?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. You can think that one over for a minute.
I'm not sure I can weigh in on that. I mean, honestly, I think that, you know, there are disorganized people everywhere and there are organized people everywhere. But, but you know, you really have to sort of take the time to think about some of this stuff. And more families are just so busy and living such hectic lives that some of these things can fall by the wayside. So that's when they call me to sort of help.
Well, we have a hectic hour here on the morning show. We'll continue our discussion with Nicole Anzia, the owner of a Washington-based professional organizing service called Neatnik. And we're talking about all the free stuff and what we should do with it. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. So what do we do with all the free stuff we tend to collect? We're drowning in it, seemingly. How do you handle it? What do you do with all this free stuff? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you use it? Do you not use it? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We're talking with Nicole Anzia, freelance writer for The Washington Post, owner of Neatnik, a Washington, D.C.-based professional organizing service. Her recent piece for The Post is I Declutter Homes for a Living, I Hate Free Stuff. Nicole, there's also the entire category of corporate swag. And hey, I mean, no industry is immune. Just ask any public radio employee and they'll show you all the cool swag they picked up at some point. What should or what could companies do instead of making and handing out so much free stuff?
Yeah, so I do want to make clear that all free stuff is not terrible. However, it's just the overall quantity of free stuff. So some of those things that public radio gives away and other, you know, corporations and nonprofits give away can be useful, but I just, you know, I just urge people to sort of think about it. But I, you know, I guess I'm not a marketing expert or a branding expert, but I guess my thought was just for corporations and for big nonprofits and organizations, you know, that want their name out there and that want to be branded and want the visibility of all of this stuff, to just think about what they could produce that could be not only useful but also get their name out there, and then just to think creatively about other ways that this could be accomplished. So in my column, you know, I suggested that, you know, maybe there's some, you know, event happening locally, I don't know, like a 10K or a race or a fundraiser where organizations or corporations could, you know, donate money or be supportive in another way and have, you know, a big banner with their name there or in an event book as one of the major donors, which I know happens, but maybe there are potentially other ways to gain visibility like that. I've also suggested in my column, and you know there are probably many more that I haven't thought of, but that some of the money spent by these big corporations on freebies and you know other sort of free giveaways, maybe they could again like donate some school supplies to a local school in need, or donate office supplies to a nonprofit who could really put them to good use, and that they could also get credit for doing that in the community, and, you know, sort of spread the word about their company and the goodwill that they're spreading in different ways than just sort of dropping this stuff on us.
So do you think we should put some pressure on companies if we don't like all the freebies? Should we be writing to them and say, hey, instead of sending me this, why don't you do X?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that people are doing that a little bit without much success. I mean, probably, and again, like I understand that employees and that companies are proud of the work they do and want to have their name out there, and rightfully so. And I just think, though, to maybe not produce 10 different things with their name on it and give them away all the time, but maybe have like one thing that's their thing that they give away. And then for us as people who are taking this free stuff, you know, I mean, not only can we write to them and express our opinions and maybe, you know, just try to sway them away from producing and giving away so much, but also for them to just, you know, for us to think about on the demand side, whether or not we really take it, right? Or because if they produce all this stuff and in the end nobody really wants it and nobody's taking it, say at a, you know, a big conference or, you know, that type of an event, maybe that then, you know, is the way to get the message across that the demand just isn't there for this stuff anymore. But certainly, I mean, I think contacting nonprofits and saying, look, you know, I don't even celebrate Christmas. Please don't send me any Christmas greeting cards or don't send me any more address labels. I have enough to last me 10 years are all useful ways to make your voice heard.
We got an email from Melissa who writes about junk mail in general, not just the mailing labels. It's so frustrating, particularly political junk mail. I get so much and I don't even open it. It just goes straight to the recycle bin. Between that and offers for insurance, I bet I throw out an average of 3 to 5 items every day. And as has been mentioned, if I donate to a political cause, the last thing I want to see it used for is creating more junk mail. It just seems that it could be a lot more strategic. So it's not just, you know, free bottle openers and things like that. We're just inundated with paper.
We are. And, you know, I often do, you know, I live in Washington, D.C. I'm well aware of all of these political organizations, especially in, you know, time like right now before the midterms where everybody's getting political mail. You know, and some of that is just going to happen no matter what we do, unfortunately. But I do urge people, you know, for instance, if you're going to give a political donation, to say incumbent upon this political donation is that you take me off of your mailing list, right? Like, I'm already a supporter. I support you. I am giving you money. I don't want to receive any more mailings. And usually they will try to accommodate you. It may take a little while, but they'll accommodate you. The same goes for catalogs and things like that. You can always call the companies. There's a website called Catalog Choice where you can unsubscribe from some of these mailings and or, like I said, call the company itself and say, please stop sending me these catalogs. It'll take a couple of months to really take effect. But, there are ways that we can do this, but still, we're going to get the junk mail. And I think, you know, hopefully over time, that lessens too, but I can't promise anything.
Okay, but most of us have a lot of stuff in our homes that's not free stuff that just has accumulated. Where else do you see people getting in trouble when it comes to clutter?
Oh, my gosh. Where do we have clutter? We have clutter everywhere, let me tell you.
What's the biggest offender?
I think that people, there's a lot of clothing. There's way more clothing than people used to have. We all just buy clothing that's cheap and we think we'll wear, and it's just turnover. Books, especially in Washington, D.C. and other places, there's a lot of, you know, people collecting books. Office supplies, people buy them in bulk. You know, you buy 10,000 staples, and it's going to take you the rest of your life to use them. In the kitchen, I just feel like all of these, you know, there's always some new gadget that we are enticed into purchasing and then rarely use. So I just think, unfortunately, it's a little bit different for everybody, but everybody is just sort of collecting more and more stuff than, for instance, our parents did.
So we're all a potential episode of the Hoarders. Is that what you're...
Yeah, no, hopefully not. But, I mean, I do tell people that, you know, when people feel overwhelmed by all this stuff, that they're definitely not alone and that many, many, many people are sort of struggling with, you know, keeping their houses in order and making it a place that they will enjoy being and that functions well for them. So, you know, not so much hoarding, but that this is a really ongoing problem and there's less and less time for people to sort of deal with it in a way that is... that they have time to, you know, take care of it.
Speaking of less and less time, we have less and less of it in this program, but leave us with, in the last minute here, leave us with a quick organizational tip that we could put into practice today.
Okay. So put a bag by your front door, in your dining room, wherever. Walk around your house and find 10 things that you haven't touched and don't need and don't want and put them in a bag and put them in your car once the bag is full and figure out whether or not there's a local place that you can donate them where somebody else can use them or maybe, you know, a local school or somewhere where somebody else can make use of it. But keep a bag somewhere convenient that you can put things in that you no longer need and can give away, and then make sure you do it. they actually get to your car and actually get donated. So I think that is one tip. And then to the point of this program, you know, just really think about what you're buying and what you're taking for free and whether or not you really need it and want it in your house.
Nicole, thanks for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Nicole Anzia is a freelance writer for The Washington Post. She's the owner of Neatnik, a Washington, D.C.-based professional organizing service. And also, she's originally from Wisconsin. Yay! She was our guest this morning. It's the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show.